So basically we were discussing Anapana Sati Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya, one of the quite important sutta, which is talking about Anapana Sati meditation or mindfulness on breathing. So we were going through it step by step. And last time we have covered actually the fifth step. Just to brief you what we were covered and how we are getting on to the sutta. Actually, this whole sutta is directly related with our practice. So the importance of this sutta is Buddha is giving us some sort of a shortcut. You know, in Satipatthana Sutta, if you consider Anapanasati, breathing meditation is one part of it. Actually, the Kayanupassana section has 14 meditation objects, Kammatthana, and Anapanasati is one of them. And then we have Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana, and again, there are five methods in Dhammanupassana. But on the other hand, in Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha is giving us some sort of a brief method how to cover all these four aspects of Satipatthana just using this single Anapanasati. So that is the beauty of this sutta. So Buddha is informing us or explaining us how to develop all four Satipatthanas using Anapanasati. And not only that, after one is conversant with it, one is well trained in that method, one can further improve it to develop seven bojjhangas. And once we are developing bojjhangas, we can have sort of clarity of mind, the wisdom and the freedom of mind. So that is called vijja vimutti. The freedom of mind, the sort of the wisdom coupled freedom. Vijja and vimutti go hand in hand. So that too also available in this whole series. So there's a kind of a formula Buddha is teaching us in this sutta. Just by developing one aspect or just by developing one technique, one can achieve four benefits. And by developing four aspects, one can develop seven benefits or seven aspects. So that is the seven bojjhangas. And by developing seven aspects, seven qualities, one can achieve two aspects. So that is the vijja and vimutti. So this kind of a beautiful sutta, if you like, you can, this kind of a beautiful formula, Buddha is telling in Anapanasati Sutta, one leads to four, four leads to seven, and seven leads to two. This is a kind of a technique that you can memorize how the whole path where Buddha is giving some sort of an explanation, kind of a route, kind of a roadmap Buddha is giving in this Anapanasati Sutta. So there are Anapanasati is therefore quite unique meditation technique, and the in Anapanasati Sutta there is no any specific note about the samatha side, but directly Buddha is taking us to the wisdom development, directly to the vipassana side. So therefore the first four aspects or first four steps are dealing with Kayanupassana, next four steps are dealing with Vedananupassana, next four steps are dealing with Chittanupassana, and last four steps are dealing with Dhammanupassana. So likewise, you can understand now 4x4, that means 16 steps are there. So altogether 16 steps are there. So Buddha is giving us some sort of very beautiful map, beautiful strategy to develop four foundations of mindfulness by practicing according to these 16 steps. The very first step is quite an entry point to what we can call as clear comprehension. You know, simple mindfulness, where we are establishing mindfulness. We are simply establishing our attention on the present moment. That's all. That's the bare attention. Our attention is not about the past or not about the future, but rather about the present moment. Now, suppose we are living in the present. The next stage is, now we have to inquire. We have to introduce kind of a curiosity to the process. We have to search about certain aspects of the in-breath and out-breath. So this is actually done purposely. This is how Buddha is turning our attention towards the wisdom aspect. Now we are Buddha is seeding plants, so giving attribute of wisdom in a very beautiful, in a very delicate manner. So he's asking us to see the difference between in-breath and out-breath, asking us to see the difference between two consecutive in-breaths, two consecutive out-breaths. You know, the breath itself is a subtle object. It is not a gross object. So finding out various subtle details of breath is not an easy task. So the breaths are typically, we can see, quite normal, quite equal. But when one's mindfulness is well developed and the concentration is fairly focused, fairly accurate, then these subtle differences are able to recognize. So this is how Buddha is taking us to the depth of the meditation. Now he is asking us to see whether the in-breath is longer or shorter, whether the out-breath is longer or shorter. That means, say, we are experiencing in-breath for quite a long time. Say, a couple of 8 seconds, we are experiencing the in-breath. Suppose the next time we couldn't experience that long, it has ended up within 4 seconds. So now we understand, okay, the present in-breath when compared to the previous in-breath is shorter because we have experienced only 4 seconds. But previous one lasted for 8 seconds. So likewise, you can apply the same principle to the out-breath. So out-breath also, it can be longer or it can be shorter. So, and then Buddha is asking us to see the whole in-breath and the whole out-breath. That means it is not immediately starting. It is not abruptly starting, but rather it is gradually starting. There's a slow beginning. There's a gradual beginning of the in-breath. And then we are reaching the middle. And ultimately, we are reaching the end part, the ending part, kind of a fading away part. Before the beginning of out-breath, there's a slight gap. And then the slow beginning, the slight gradual beginning of the out-breath, and then the middle, and then the end. Then before the beginning of next in-breath, there's a slight gap, there's a short gap. So if one is very accurately mindful about breathing, so all these aspects, all these different components are visible, are possible to perceive. So don't think that these are sort of fine cut edges are there or the kind of marked boundaries are there. But these are some relative measures. One can relatively think, okay, this is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end, and this is the gap. And this is the beginning of the out-breath, this is the middle, this is the end, and this is the gap. So likewise, we are getting a kind of a relative measure to recognize, so this is the in-breath and this is the out-breath. So, if one is capable of applying this sort of attention, so Buddha asking to maintain some sort of a restraint, because you can't do this task with a sort of wavering mind, with a doubtful mind, with a uncomfortable posture, you can't do it. So your body has to be well settled. Your posture has to be very stable. Mind has to be fairly stable. The focus has to be very accurate, very precise, and it is fairly fine-tuned. And mind is not wavering now. So no doubts. So you have the faith. And you have some well curious, well inquiring, investigating mind. So to that mind, one can recognize, okay, this is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end, this is the gap. This is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end, this is the gap. So likewise, one is finding all these subtle details in this whole breathing cycle. So Buddha is introducing a particular term called sikkhati. So he's emphasizing that we need to restrain ourselves without forcefully breathing, without falling asleep, and not applying too much effort, but maintaining a very tranquil, very settled, fairly peaceful attitude without enjoying any kind of doubt, without encouraging any doubt. So we have to have some sort of a restraint in order to reach this stage. So when one is well established at this stage, so as a result of this exercise, the breathing starts to calm down. It's already a very subtle sensation, but it becomes more and more subtler. It ultimately becomes subtlest. Now sometimes we get the challenge how to maintain our attention to this extremely subtle sensation. Now you can't differentiate whether this is the in-breath or this is the out-breath. It has become almost similar. And again, sometimes it has even disappeared. Still, you have to maintain your attention at the nostril without wavering the mind, without thinking, but keeping your attention at the nostril. So this is where the fourth stage, Buddha is asking us to maintain again restraint, to behave well, to calm down, to settle, allow the breath to calm down. Pasambhayam kaya sankharam asa sisam iti sikkati. So we have to allow the breath to settle, allow breath to calm down. So this is a very peaceful situation where the whole process is happening by itself and we have to take the back seat and simply observe. So we are not interfering with the process, but rather we allow the process to go on by itself. So we are taking at the back seat and we enjoy the process. It's quite beautiful. Now mind is not wandering. Even if it go outside, it immediately comes back because the whole inside process is very calming, very peaceful. Sort of an enjoyment is there. So there is no inner burning. But when mind goes outside, there's a burning. So therefore, when mind understands that, so it immediately comes back. Again, it immediately settles. And now the process is going on. So that is the beauty of it. This is where the whole meditation becomes now beautiful. At the beginning, meditation appears like extremely boring. You have a lot of aches, a lot of pains, and there is no any growth. So likewise, a lot of complaints are there. But when one reaches this fourth stage, there are less and less complaints, and you love to meditate, and you want to meditate. And you feel now you are sort of having some kind of a command on your life about your mind. Because you can concentrate the mind, you can collect your attention at a one place, that is the nostril. So you are keeping your attention at the nostril for a considerable period of time. Say at the beginning, you can maintain that for 5 minutes. Second, maybe you can maintain it for 10 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. Likewise, you can simply keep your attention at the nostril longer and longer. Now the whole body feels quite pleasant and quite pleasing. And even pleasurable feelings are now arising and whole body feel tranquil, whole mind feel tranquil. And you might even feel like floating, quite the whole body, even though it is heavy, right now it has become quite lighter. So this is where we are reaching the fifth stage, where Buddha is asking us to understand these various feeling tones, where they may be kind of pleasant feelings, sort of pleasurable feelings, either it may be bodily pleasurable feelings or either may be mental pleasurable feelings. Because this feelings have both aspects, either mental or bodily. So both are possible. And there are various aspects actually mentioned in the books. There are different kind of intensities are there available in this pressure. Sometimes immediately kind of electric pulse, this pressure can come and go. That is only for a short period. And there are another type like waves. It is whole coming and whole feeling. Pressure like a wave coming and again going. Again coming, again going. It's like a wave touching the body, whole body. And there may be some feelings like floating. And sometimes like you are bathing on a pool. The whole body is quite pleasing. all pressure is for sort of pervading yourself. So likewise, possibilities are there. Again, sometimes the you might feel that you are yourself become internally happy. You are not getting happiness from outside, but some internal happiness is there just by being with this whole process. Now you understand this happiness does not depend on the outside conditions. You can have your own happiness. You can have your, you can generate your happiness just by restraining the mind, just by developing the mind, just by training the mind. And again, you don't need to sort of be responsible about the thoughts, because you understand thoughts are just thoughts. They are arising due to various conditions. You don't need to claim them. You don't need to name them as me or mine. Simply, you can recognize thoughts are thoughts. Because, you know, typically, we think that all thoughts are my thoughts. So I have to be responsible. I have to act according to those thoughts. It is not. Due to various conditions, thoughts are arising. But if we know that this is simply a thought, we can recognize that and allow it to pass away. So this is a huge release for the yogi. Because you know at the beginning there are many thoughts are happening. Maybe angry thoughts, maybe lustful thoughts, maybe sort of entanglement, lot of proliferation. So all these are issues. But later, as a result of this practice, the mind becomes calmer and calmer. Well settled. Your inner chatter going to reduce. And your mind become fairly settled. So it is now quiet. So you are enjoying the stillness in a way. You are enjoying the silence in a way. So the beauty of silent mind. The beauty of settled mind. The beauty of collected mind. The beauty of concentrated mind. One can enjoy. So this second stage, the sixth stage is quite similar to the fifth stage, where Buddha is asking us to be aware of the happiness, be aware of the pleasure, be aware of the joy arising due to this whole process. Sukha pati sangvedi asa sisamiti sikkhati, sukha pati sangvedi pasa sisamiti sikkhati. So sukha means happiness. Sukha means pleasure. So you can understand, even though meditation is in a way little difficult at the beginning, it has this pleasurable aspect as well. It has this happy aspect as well. When mind is well trained, so you can enjoy it. So you are enjoying the meditation. It's no more boring, but rather it is enjoyable. You can observe all these pleasurable sensations, all these pleasurable feelings, maybe mental happiness, you can understand, you can feel. So one important aspect that Buddha is introducing here is typically when happiness arises, we like it, we want it. It's my happiness. I want to have it for a long time. I want to have it for myself. I want to own it. So these are the typical happiness related or pleasure related our tendencies. But right now the important thing is Buddha is asking us to see it as just happiness. See the pleasure as just pleasure. Don't try to own it. Don't try to claim it. Don't try to control it. Don't expect it. But rather when it is happening, just be aware of it. In a way, looking at it objectively. Happiness is just happiness. You are not going to ask for more happiness, or you are not going to reject the happiness, but rather you understand, you recognize this is happiness. Happiness also coming and lasting for some time, and again it is going, it is disappearing, it is fading away. Again, kind of pleasure arises, and again it is disappearing. Again it arises, again it disappears. So likewise you understand this happiness also is conditioned. It is happening due to various causes. And even if you like, probably if your attention is well focused and you are very sharp, probably you can recognize this happiness has causes. This pleasurable feelings have causes. And those causes also might be able to recognize. So likewise, we are coming the sixth stage, where Buddha is asking us to see various pleasurable feelings, happy feelings are arising, and they are simply changing, manifesting in different ways, at different places, and disappearing, fading away by their own, or due to other reasons, and maybe out of our control. So we have a kind of an open mind. There is no any preferences, and we simply like an outsider observing all these things objectively. So this is the sixth stage Buddha is explaining in this Anapanasati Sutta. So with that note, I ask Chatur to present today's, maybe if we have other questions or if there are any other notes to make. So now it is your time, Chatur.
Avasarai Bhante. We only have two questions today. So I'll just put a little link into the chat. If you have any questions, you can write in there. If not, you can actually raise your hand and speak to Bhante directly, because usually we get a lot more than two questions. So if you do have anything, please say something. And just a little message, which I said earlier, if you know any kids or kids that are part of the mindfulness school or Satipasala, please invite them. And if you aren't part of our mailing list, just send us a message and we'll add you to it. So question number one, mindful sitting. Venerable Bhante, during my sitting meditation, once the mind quietens a bit, I feel like a cold water stream travels somewhere near my throat area. It is also feels like it travels up and down with the breath. Can you please explain at what stage out of the 16 stages, I guess is mindfulness, Anapanasati Sutta, this happens? That's the end.
Yeah, I mean, directly I can simply say it is in the fifth stage. But, I mean, these are even possible before that. Now, you know, if you have gone through, I mean, if we simply think in a linear way, like all these four stages we have passed, we have experienced longer breath, we have experienced shorter breath, we were able to experience the beginning, middle, end, that is the third stage, and then the breath has calmed down. So if you feel that you have passed through all these stages, and while you reach this stage, assume that this kind of internal sort of happy feelings, pleasurable feelings are arising, you've got to look at them objectively like an outsider, and it belongs to the fifth stage. But on the other hand, this kind of, you know, saliva coming and kind of irritations happening, like ants are going, maybe insect is sort of dancing, or this kind of different sensations can happen even before that. Now, even when your mind starts to concentrate, these kind of various sensations can happen, and they actually come and go. They won't last for a long time. And therefore, what you are experiencing could be one of these. So that is also a possibility. So just continue a practice. If it is happening again and again, assume this kind of a sprinkler kind of a experience, kind of water, the wave coming and bathing you and then going. So this kind of very pleasant, very pleasurable kind of happy experience. These are possibilities, and all actually belong to the fifth stage. Piti Patisangedi Asati Samidhi Sikkati.
Question number two. This is mindful walking. Dear Bhante, last time you explained very clearly how to identify and distinguish mindfulness and concentration when we are practicing breathing meditation. This question is about the same scenario, but in walking. When I start the walking practice, I can focus on left and right soles after some effort. When I keep on doing this, the number of sensations I observe increase. And I could say that more and more information comes within my observation range. Can I recognize this as mindfulness or the increase of quality of mindfulness? When the walking process continues, as described above, the effort I put on keeping the mind on the process becomes less and less. Sometimes I feel that the observations stick to the process without any effort, and the mind is just paying attention to the left and right soles touching the ground only. The information I gather becomes less and less as well, but the attention keeps sticking to the same confined area of the walking process. Can I understand this as concentration in the walking practice? Much merits for your guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, so actually at the beginning, we are simply establishing mindfulness, because still our mind is wandering, is shifting, it is jumping to the past, is shifting to the future. So it is with a lot of effort, with a lot of training, that we are trying to keep our attention on the present moment. So that itself is a kind of a challenge, because the present moment is quite ordinary. It may not be pleasurable. The majority of feelings are quite ordinary, quite neutral. So therefore, mind does not appreciate it. So therefore, in order to keep our attention on this ordinary, neutral experience, we need fair amount of attention, fair amount of effort, and develop mindfulness. And once it is developed, then mind has fairly trained. Now mind has fairly restrained, and mind understood just being with this present moment is a pleasant experience. And if it is shifting to the past or to the future, it is not that pleasant. Rather, it has some sort of a burning, some sort of a suffering is involved. So mind itself has understood that. So it likes to dwell in the present moment. So when mind is dwelling in the present moment, it is very much like it's dwelling with the present experience. Now we are introducing some sort of an anchoring place, some sort of an object for it to observe. Now while walking, now the activity is happening right now. Our left leg is touching right now. And there's a sensation, suppose there's a hardness right now. And the mind is staying in the right at this present moment, and the physical experience also happening in the present moment. So the physical experience or the physical process and the mental process are well coupled, well synchronized. So therefore, we don't need much effort to synchronize this, because the whole process, all both processes are now well synchronized. Now it is happening in an effortless manner, because it is well coupled now. Physical process is happening in the present moment, and the mental process also well coupled and observing, attached with the present moment, with the bodily process, and it is happening quite naturally. And we don't need to interfere, we simply have to observe it. We simply have to allow the mind to observe it. So that is the beauty. At the beginning, we have to struggle to have this balance, have this sort of equilibrium, have this synchronization. Once it is well synchronized, we can allow the process to happen, and we simply have to take the back seat and simply observe the process. Mental process is observing, physical process is happening. So therefore, coming to this balance is, in a way, we can say, kind of an art. So you need to understand whether to improve the effort, or whether to reduce the effort, or whether to introduce attention, or whether to reduce the attention. Because if you put too much attention, too much effort, your mind becomes restless. If you are not applying enough effort, then you feel sort of bored, you feel sort of lazy. So these things are also possible. On the other hand, I mean, boredom has another aspect as well. More and more you experience, more and more you observe, sort of another type of boredom is available in the future. But right now, I can say, so when the mental process and bodily process are well coupled, well synchronized, you are simply maintaining, you got to simply maintain that and get the maximum benefit. Try to observe very closely what is really happening at this physical process, how it is starting, how it is changing, how it is disappearing. Yeah.
So we received a couple more questions. Question number 3, mindful sitting. As a beginner, is sitting on the floor important? Also, can Bhante suggest any alternative postures? That's the end.
Yeah, I mean, you can use a cushion, and if you are simply using the flat ground, there could be little difficulty, because you know the angle of your backside and the ground has to have a little 105 degree angle. It is not 90 degrees. So if you simply sit 90 degrees angle, so it might not be comfortable for long sitting, because you've got to maintain your posture and it needs a lot of effort. But on the other hand, if you are maintaining 105 degree posture, I think you understand what I am telling. When your thighs and the backside has 105 degree angle, so then experimentally it is found, so this kind of an angle posture is fairly comfortable for long sitting. So therefore, sometimes people are using a cushion just for the buttocks and just making the buttocks a little up. Therefore, we are making this angle, and then this sort of a posture is quite comfortable and quite possible for long sitting. So therefore, sitting on the ground is not compulsory. But if you are sort of very old person and if you have back pains and all these things, you can use a chair as well.
Question number 4. This is a theory question. Thank you for facilitating this session. Could you please point me to a reliable source to read the Satipatthana Sutta in English medium? Thank you. That's the end.
Yeah. You can read Bhikkhu Bodhi's Majjhima Nikaya translation, middle length discourses. Bhikkhu Bodhi's sort of explanations are quite good. And on the other hand, fairly comprehensive. Very interesting book is compiled by Bhikkhu Analeo, that is called Satipatthana, Direct Path to Freedom or Direct Path to Realization. That is, in a way, is one of the best books available related to this Satipatthana. And actually, the Venerable Bhikkhu Analeo has supplied or compiled another book called Perspectives of Satipatthana, comparing Tibetan tradition, Chinese tradition, and Theravada tradition. So that is another book, but that is actually sort of an enhancement, kind of an extension towards his first book. Satipatthana, the direct experience or direct knowledge, the Satipatthana book is quite a comprehensive book one can read. So first you can read, suppose, Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation in Majjhima Nikaya. Satipatthana translation is there, Satipatthana Sutta is there. And if you like more detail, probably you can read Satipatthana by Analeo, Bhikkhu Analeo as well.
Question number 5. This is about mindfulness in daily activities. Venerable Bhante, thank you for your guidance. Please explain in day-to-day tasks how we can maintain mindfulness. Theruvan Sarana, that's the end.
Yeah, actually, there are different methods are there. Probably you can, suppose you can listen to various sounds happening from yourself. Say you are cleaning the garden, so there are various sounds happening. So you are eating, maybe slight sounds are happening. So observing these or listening these various sounds is one activity, one possibility. And assume that you are sweeping in the garden, so you have to hold the broom. And at that time, your hands can feel various sensations. That is another place you can keep your attention. Maybe you can feel that if you are using a broom, maybe you can see how the garbage is being collected, garbage is being thrown to a particular, collected to a particular place. And all these things are sort of observations happening right now. Suppose you are doing brushing your teeth, and you are taking the toothpaste to your hand, you are taking the brush to your hand, you are putting a little bit of toothpaste to the brush, and you are putting it inside your mouth. Now you may feel the taste of the toothpaste, and it is touching the gums, and now you are brushing, and now you can feel the brush being touching the gums and the teeth, and you more and more toothpaste can be the taste of toothpaste can be felt, and all these things are happening right now. Actually, all these are very, in a way, ordinary experiences. Don't think that we need some extraordinary, exciteful experience to develop mindfulness, but rather more general experiences. More ordinary experiences are quite enough or quite possible and quite valid to develop mindfulness, because those are the places we ignore our attention. We simply get into sort of a robot-like or kind of an autopilot mood, and we simply live in a different world. We are in a different world, but some sort of an activity is going on. That is where we become unmindful. But in order to become mindful, we have to couple our attention with the present activity. So this present activity is actually a kind of an ordinary activity, kind of a simple activity. So there we need to put some effort or put some inquiring mind, put some interest to find out what are the details available in this simple activity. When I'm eating, what are the information available? How I am mixing food and the vegetables? How I am preparing the sort of the amount, piece? Am I using fork? How am I using fork and the other spoon? How it is taken to the mouth? How the mouth being opened? Are there saliva coming out? Sort of you can feel it. And how I am chewing the food. And all these tastes, different tastes are now you can feel. How you are swallowing it. So all these things are happening right now at the present moment. And all are ordinary experiences, and we are doing mindfully. We are doing while being aware of this whole process. So that is where we have to couple. We have to find out how to introduce mindfulness to these various day-to-day activities. So I have just explained a couple of ordinary activities, and similarly, you can find out various other activities, how you can apply mindfulness to these other activities. Because, you know, if you are doing mindfulness, if you are trying to improve your mindfulness, just trying to do it while in a walking session and a sitting session is not enough in a way. And again, you might have only limited time. But on the other hand, if you are applying mindfulness to various daily activities, there are so many activities you are getting involved in a day-to-day way. So there you can try to apply. So that is in a way kind of an exercise, kind of a skill that you have to develop. Yeah, how to apply mindfulness to day-to-day activities. Now I have given a couple of examples. Hope you can, similarly, you can find out to how to apply to other activities as well.
Question number 6. This is mindful walking. Dear Bhante, when I practice sitting mindfulness, the breath becomes subtle and subtler. The breath is nearly vanished. I can keep mindfulness intact for some time. The outline of the body feels blurred, and the mind is most of the time with the body. I could feel the very subtle movements of the body as a liquid mass or a jelly moving very slowly. This causes the weightlessness and happy feeling as well. And it is more or less like an air bubble traveling across the body. Can this be identified as the air element and be mindful on that? That's the end.
Yeah, that is also possible. Because, I mean, air can be manifest, or the air element can manifest in different ways. Vibrations, movement are all actually manifestations of air element. little kind of a movement. Your body is little moving to maybe to the sides, maybe to the front, and kind of a vibration happen. All these things are actually the attributes of or the actions of air element. You can pay your attention to all of these, and then your mindfulness becomes further refined, and more subtle manifestations become available, or you can reveal more and more subtle manifestations of the air element.
Question number 7. This is mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, when I sit down, I bring my mind to the body and calm the mind, and then I focus on the breath. But sometimes my thoughts would be too loud and feel like my thoughts are overpowering. At this stage, it is hard for me to focus on the breath. No matter how much effort I put, it is hard for me to focus. This doesn't always occur, only in some meditation sessions. Other times, it is very easy to focus on the breath and be very mindful at the nostril. Thank you, Bhante, for your advice. That's the end.
Could you repeat the first part, Chatu?
Okay. Dear Bhante, when I sit down, I bring my mind to the body and calm the mind, and then I focus on the breath. But sometimes my thoughts would be too loud and feel like my thoughts are very overpowering. At this stage, it is hard for me to focus on the breath, and no matter how much effort I put, it is hard for me to focus.
Yeah.
Is that enough? Okay.
Yeah, I think, yeah. So basically, I mean, there are stages. Assume you are able to calm down. You are able to settle. And the mind is very quiet. Almost no thoughts. And immediately, then kind of a overflowing of thoughts. And this is a possibility. And at that time, rather than struggling with it, you just have to be patient with this overflowing thoughts. It's like you are sort of searching for something, and immediately something has happened. Something is overflowing now. It has happened immediately. Now you simply have to observe it, be patient with it, and to simply tolerate it. And then this overflowing ultimately will fade away. And then your mind become fairly settled, even more than where you were. I hope you understood the point. Now, suppose you were in some sort of a tranquility, some sort of a clarity. And after that, immediately some sort of overflowing thoughts happen. And you allow it to happen. You are simply being patient with it. And after that overflowing has finished, now you are going to a more deeper settlement, more deeper clarity, more deeper tranquility. So this is how, in a way, the mind more and more settles, more and more become tranquil, more and more become peaceful. So assume, I mean, just to give a kind of an analogy, assume that mind has different layers. Assume that you were settled in the upper layer, but the lower layer had a lot of impediments, a lot of garbage. But once your mind has settled to this upper layer, and you are now touching the garbage of the lower layer, and you got to remove it, you got to purify it. And this purification happens like an overflowing, and you have to allow it. And once it has gone, once it has taken out, now we are touching the ground level of the next layer, that is more deeper, more calmer, more peaceful, more tranquil. So simply allow it. Don't struggle with it. Don't try to take your attention to the breath. Just try to maintain your attention within the body. Just maintain your attention on the posture, allowing mind to just go through that experience. And there are a lot of overflowing thoughts happening one after the other, and no need to try to find the content of it, and simply allow it to go away, and ultimately it will settle.
Question number 8. This is on mindfulness in day-to-day activities again. Please, can you give some advice on techniques to build mindfulness in day-to-day work, both academic and other work? It is easier to do this when you are doing sitting or walking practice of mindfulness.
Chatu, I got to disturb you. Can you start it again, please?
Yeah. Okay, sure. So this is question number 8 for day-to-day activities, mindfulness. Please, can you give some advice on techniques to build mindfulness in day-to-day work, both academic and other work? It is easier to do this when you are doing sitting or walking practice of mindfulness. How can this be extended to day-to-day work as well? Thank you. That's the end.
Yeah, I think very similar question I have answered before. How to apply mindfulness for day-to-day activities, and fairly similar answer I have to give here as well. Now, if you apply this for academic activities, sometimes the problem is certain academic activities carry our attention too deeper. So we sometimes get lost in that activity. Say you are reading a book and that content is, assume that it is very interesting. And you have to even have to think about it. You have to ponder about it. Then we might lose our limit and we start to proliferate about it. We start to become sort of a victim of that activity. We are mentally, we are involved in it. And if we go too much, then we have lost the balance. So we have lost the leg in a way that we were keeping at the mindfulness level. The activity level strength has increased, and we have lost the grounding. We have lost the mindfulness related grounding, and ultimately we become that. So that way is in a way kind of a losing of our attention. Not actually the attention, losing of our mindfulness, but rather we become too much interested about the content of the, say, a book. Suppose we are reading a book, we become too much interested about the content of the book, and ultimately we have lost the balance, and now we are thinking about the content. We are now planning about the content. We are proliferating about the content. Now actually we have lost the mindfulness. But on the other hand, if we know to maintain some sort of a balance, so we are aware, okay, now I'm reading a book. This is the title. This is the paragraph. And this is the content. And now I'm reading the second paragraph. This is the sort of the subject. This is the title. This is the subtitle. Okay, this is the content. So likewise, you have some sort of an overview of the whole picture. You are not sort of get lost in the content. Rather, you're having sort of an overview of the whole picture. And at the same time, you are aware of the content as well. So this is how, in a way, we can apply it to academic activities. And as you know, if you are more mindful and fairly improved concentration is there, you can read a book in a very little time. Because typically, once we are reading several passages, probably our attention is going outside. Again, we are spending several minutes outside. Again, we remember, okay, I was reading somewhere. Again, your attention being brought to that particular place. Again, you read. Then again, your mind drifts. Again, you are thinking, proliferating. After a couple of minutes, again, you remember, okay, I was reading a particular passage. Again, you recalling that place. Again, you are reading. So likewise, there are disturbances going on while you are reading. So it may take a lot of time. But on the other hand, if you are doing reading only, if you are doing sort of well concentrated, well focused reading, so you are reading, you are in that activity, you are not lost in the content. At the same time, you are not being distracted to various other activities, so that you can do this reading activity quite successfully. Similarly, you can try to apply to other various academic activities as well. But of course, we need to accept. But there are certain activities which involves a lot of brain, sort of lot of thinking, lot of planning. And we need to understand how to tackle these sort of activities without getting burnout. And even if it happened, how to calm down. Now, suppose you are doing something with a lot of thinking, lot of planning, with a lot of stress. and you couldn't be mindful. But later, once you come back, once you are at your home, just calm down. Just let it go. Let the pressure, let the stress, let the tension go away and come back to the body. Well ground. Come back to the present moment. So likewise, you can again establish mindfulness. Again charge your batteries.
Question number 9. This is again for mindfulness in daily activities. Bhante, this is a question about everyday mindfulness. When you are being mindful in each moment, when do you plan what you are doing next or other things? Since trying to be more mindful day to day, I feel a bit more disorganized in my day. That's the end.
Yeah, I think the opposite. Actually, more you become mindful, you have in a way a clarity of mind. You understand, okay, this is the activity currently I got to do. So you are doing it successfully. And then automatically you are aware about the next activity because your mind is not entangled. You know, I mean, typically our mind is fairly entangled with so many activities. We are trying to do this. We are trying to do that. We are thinking about another thing. We are thinking about the past. A lot of things are going on at the same time. So we don't have sort of a clarity of mind. But on the other hand, more and more we develop mindfulness. And of course, if one get into vipassana, more and more clarity of mind going to improve. And therefore, the scheduling or working as it happens become quite easy and quite possible, rather than everything becomes ad hoc or everything becomes sort of collapsed, happening everything together. So you become well organized. In a way, we can't, the organized is a, can be said in different viewpoint. But in a way, one on the other hand, just to apply another point here, you know, in order to develop wisdom, in Dhamma it is said, you have to keep things in an orderly manner. Suppose when you are entering your room, entering your house, suppose all the furniture is here and there, and you have garbage here, garbage there, and a lot of things are in a disordered manner, and you can't remember where the things are kept. So it's almost like a messy place. Then the clarity of mind being disturbed. But on the other hand, assume that when you are entering your house, everything is well properly placed and it is very quite clean and everything has their own proper place and you have a kind of pleasing environment. So then the clarity of mind is improving. So therefore it is mentioned in order to develop Dhamma Vichaya, there's the second Bodhyanga, which is called Dhamma Vichaya. Having that kind of a clear environment, ordered environment, well-organized environment has a contribution. So with that contribution, your mind becomes more clear, more spacious, and you have the clarity of mind. And as a result, you can take the correct decision. You can look at a problem in a better way.
Excuse me, Bhante. So that person just wanted to ask a clarification for that question. I think what they meant was if you are going to do activities, when do you do the planning? At what time can you do that? I guess if you're doing something mindfully, like you still need to do some sort of planning, is there like a good or bad time to do that? Hopefully that question makes sense.
Sorry. So actually, I'm a little confused about the problem. So, I mean, you want to do some activity and you are asking how to do the planning to that activity. Am I correct?
I think that's the question, yes.
Yeah. Actually, you can plan mindfully. It is not that you are trying to live precisely on the present moment, letting go the entire past, forgetting the entire past and not thinking at all about the future, then we are going to a sort of an extreme. It is not. You can't live like that. And if there are things to learn from the past, we can reflect about that. And that is one attribute of mindfulness. Buddha says very clearly, when one is developing mindfulness, a good memory is an outcome of it. Chirakatampi, chirabhasitampi, sarita, anusarita. Various activities what you have done long time ago is available for you. You can easily recall because you were mindful while you were doing that activity. And again, at the moment, at this moment, you are mindful. So the balance of the mind is there. And so you can quickly recall what you have done some time ago, long time ago even. So the memory is, in a way, a skill. On the other hand, if you want to do planning, and you are presently well established, you know you are right now, you are sitting. But now you can think about the future, about tomorrow. So tomorrow, at what time you have to be at the office? What are the meetings you got to participate? And what are the problems you got to sort out? And likewise, you can think about it, but at the same time, you know right now you are thinking, you are planning, but well mindful about this activity. If you want to stop it, you can stop it as well. So in a way, it is not that we are trying to completely stop thinking, but you can use this thinking skill skillfully. I mean, thinking activity, the thinking is one kind of a skill the human kind is having. So you can wisely utilize that. You can, when you want to think, when you want to plan, you can use it. When you don't want to plan, when you don't want to think, you can stop it and you can just be. You can simply enjoy the present moment. You can enjoy the calmness. You can enjoy the silence. That is also possible. So therefore, don't think that through meditation, through mindfulness, we are trying to completely stop thinking. You can do stop thinking as well. And at the same time, if you want to think, you can think as well.
So that's actually the last question we had. We're nearly at the end of time, but maybe I'll just put the question to the audience. If you have anything, you can raise your hand or send a message and speak to Bhante directly, if there's anyone. So it doesn't look like we have any more questions. I'll pass on to Surangaya to finish up.
Thank you, Chatu. I'll wrap up today's session since Arun is not online. Hope you all had a good session, insightful Dhamma talk and a Q&A time. If guided sessions help you, all previous session recordings are now uploaded to the Monastery website. Also, you can refer the Q&A recordings as well if needed. As highlighted by Chatu, we also welcome high school children from the Satipasala to join the young adults practice session if they can. Also, if you are not getting the weekly email update and then the reminder email, send us your email address to add to the distribution list. Our email address is in the chat section. So on behalf of everybody, I would like to thank Bhante for the valuable session today and pay homage saying sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And hope to see you all in 1 week's time. Therwan Saranai.